From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. Happy Thanksgiving. Over the holidays, we're going into the Fresh Air archives to bring you some interviews from our past. Today, guitarist and singer Doc Watson. He's been called a living national treasure for his virtuoso flat picking and his repertoire of traditional folk and bluegrass tunes. First, Doc Watson talks about his life in a 1988 interview. Then we feature a concert recorded in our studio in 1989. Also today, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews a new album by Loudon Wainwright. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. A United Nations aid convoy has reached the besieged Muslim town of Garajda today, and a second convoy that was detained by Serbs as it headed for a starving city will be able to pass through tomorrow. The BBC's Martin Dawes reports from Sarajevo.
The sending of the aid convoys into two Muslim-held towns was designed as an exercise in demonstrating to the Bosnian Serbs that the United Nations relief effort was no longer prepared to tolerate obstacles put in its way. But it hasn't turned out well. Last night, the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, Mrs. Sadako Ogata, became involved after four attempts to enter the town had been turned back by a local commander. This afternoon, the head of UN forces in Bosnia, General Filip Morion, met the Serbian military commander, General Mladic, and gained his assurance that the trucks would be allowed in, but on a different road. The intended route, General Morion was told, is mined. The Gorizda convoy is on its way back to base after delivering food into the town. It was delayed for a day when a mine, probably planted by Muslim forces, disabled an armored ambulance from the French military escort.
The BBC's Martin Dawes. South African President F.W. de Klerk has proposed a plan for a series of agreements with black leaders that he says could lead to multiracial elections in early 1994. It's the first time that de Klerk has set a deadline for ending white minority rule. The African National Congress rejected de Klerk's proposed date as totally unacceptable. ANC leaders have recently called for multiracial elections within the next 9 to 12 months. In Tokyo today, Japan's former prime minister denied any links with organized crime in testimony before the parliament. NPR's Marjorie Sun reports.
The Japanese public could only hear Takeshita's denials today. That's because Takeshita's ruling party, reeling from what is arguably Japan's biggest political scandal, prevailed over the opposition and barred TV cameras from broadcasting his testimony. Takeshita is under attack for allegedly seeking the help of the Japanese mob in 1987 to win the election for prime minister. Takeshita is said to have asked the mob through intermediaries to suppress a smear campaign against him by a rightist group. These allegations are based on testimony from a former freight company executive who has ties to organized crime. Takeshita offered little new information under questioning today. Parliament members plan to question another LDP leader, Shin Kanimaru, about the scandal tomorrow. I'm Marjorie Sun in Tokyo.
In Angola, high-ranking government and opposition leaders say they've reached an agreement to honor last year's peace accords and avoid a renewed civil war. The officials said the government and the UNITA rebel group have agreed to implement a ceasefire and end the fighting that's taken thousands of lives over the past month. This is NPR. French prosecutors are demanding that the Supreme Court reinstate charges against a former official who allegedly collaborated with the Nazis during World War II. Paul Touvier was accused of killing Jews and French resistance leaders when he worked for Klaus Barbie, the man known as the Butcher of Lyon. In April, a lower court released Touvier, now 77, from jail and dismissed the charges. The court said there was insufficient evidence on most of the charges, and the statute of limitations had expired on the 6th, involving the execution of 7 Jewish hostages. A decision from the court could come as early as tomorrow. Residents of tornado-damaged areas in Mississippi had a reason to give thanks today. Federal disaster assistance is on the way. NPR's Cheryl Duvall reports.
President Bush has designated as disaster areas 18 Mississippi counties hardest hit by the unusual autumn tornadoes that touched down last weekend. The Federal Emergency Management Agency is still surveying the damage and may add other counties to the list. The federal government will offer cash grants, low-interest loans, and temporary housing assistance to residents and business owners who suffered losses. County and local governments will also be able to split with the federal government the cost of repairing damaged public facilities. Mississippi Governor Kirk Fortas sought the federal aid after tallying initial damage estimates of $53 million. Local authorities have blamed the storms for 15 deaths. I'm Cheryl Duvall reporting.
Despite the currency crisis facing other members of the European community, Germany's central bank has refused to lower its interest rates. Spain and Portugal devalued their currencies this week, and the French franc and the Irish pund were reported to be the targets of currency speculators. The Bundesbank has maintained that high rates are necessary to hold down the inflation that resulted from uniting the two Germanies. I'm Corey Flintoff, NPR News.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We thought you'd enjoy spending the Thanksgiving holiday in the company of one of America's most revered folk musicians, Doc Watson. Before we feature our 1988 interview, here's an excerpt of our 1989 concert.
I think we'll do one that my son Merle and I learned from John Hurt. A good old tune called Make Me Down a Pallet on Your Floor. Pallet on your floor, make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low, and then maybe my good gal, she won't know. I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow, going up the country through that sleet and snow. Yes, I'm going up the country through that sleet and snow. Ain't no telling just how far I'll go. Getting my breakfast here and my dinner in Tennessee. Get breakfast here and dinner in Tennessee. Gonna get my breakfast here, my dinner in Tennessee. Told you I was coming, so you better look for me. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. Then maybe my good gal, she won't know. What do you think about it, Jack? Yeah, I like that notion right there. Well, you know that I can't lay down on your bed. Now, honey, I can't lay down on your bed. No, baby, can't lay down across that pretty bed. Cause my good woman, she might kill me dead. And don't you let my good gal catch you here. Hey, don't you let my good gal catch you here. If you do, she may shoot you. She might cut and stab you too. Ain't no telling what that gal might do. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down? Make it soft and low. Then maybe my good gal, she won't know. The way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. The way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. Yeah, the way I've been sleeping, my back and shoulders tired. I think I'll turn and try sleeping on my side. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, won't you make it down, make it soft and low. And then maybe my good gal, she won't know. Let's play some country counterpoint, son. Make me down a pallet on your floor. make me down a pallet on your floor. Honey, make it over, close behind that door. Make it where your good man will never go.
That's Doc Watson, along with Jack Lawrence. We'll have more of that concert coming up in the second half of today's program. Doc Watson is the guitarist who's usually called the single finest flat picker in the country. The only argument you're likely to get about that is from people who don't want to praise his playing at the expense of praising his singing. Throughout much of his three-decade career, Watson performed and toured with his son, guitarist Merle Watson. In 1985, Merle was tragically killed in a tractor accident. Doc Watson is only performing occasionally these days, about a half dozen times a year, but he continues to record. In the last few years, he's put out recordings of gospel tunes, kids' songs, and a collection of old-time Southern songs. And every April in North Carolina, Doc Watson holds a music festival in Merle's memory. Doc Watson was born in Deep Gap, North Carolina. His father was a musician, although not a professional performer, but he introduced Doc to playing by making him his first banjo.
That was in the summer of 1934. Made my first little stringed instrument. I had a harmonica before that. But Dad showed me a few of the old-time Fralin or Clawhammer banjo-style tunes, and one day he brought it to me and put it in my hands and said, "Son, I want you to learn to play this thing real well. Some of these days we'll get you a better one." He said, "Might help you get through the world."
And what was it like for you the first time you got the banjo into your hands? What did you do with it?
I remember how I felt, but I don't remember hardly what it was like learning the first tunes. It was kind of hard for Dad to show me because I couldn't see his hands. But he finally got across to me how to do the licks on the banjo and how to note the thing. And I could figure out where the notes were because it was fretless. And you could slide along with your fingers, and finally you'd come to the right one, you know, and you found out how to get there without missing them.
So you were really pretty self-taught.
For the most part, yes, I was. The guitar, absolutely, I was self-taught.
How did you get your first guitar?
One spring, my dad told my youngest brother and I, "Boys, if you'll cut all those dead chestnut, small dead chestnuts down along the road and around the edge of the field there, you can sell it for pulpwood to the tannery." And we went at it, and we cut a couple of big truckloads. It didn't make us a mint of money, but it made me enough to buy me a good little guitar from, well, I thought it was good at the time, from Sears Roebuck. And my younger brother ordered him a suit of clothes.
Now, considering that your early instruments were homemade banjos and a mail-order guitar, did you ever get really obsessed with the quality of instruments that you were playing? Some musicians just play what they have, and others get really obsessed with having instruments that are just right for them or custom-made for them?
I was fairly contented with what I had. I never had had my hands on a good guitar back in those days and didn't for years. The first good guitar that I got hold of that I would have considered much better than my mail-order box was a Martin guitar that Richard Green used to have a little music store under his... he had a boarding house or an inn there in Boone. And I went in there one day with that little mail order thing, and he said, "Why don't you let me help you get you a good guitar?" And I said, "Gosh, it costs too much." And he said, "I'll tell you what I can do. I can get you a good Martin D18 that will be a price that you can afford, and I'll take the payments down to $5 a month." And I couldn't beat that. I paid it off quicker than that, but I couldn't beat that with a stick. And at that time, I was playing at the little fruit stand and a little bean market they had in Boone and making me a few shekels on Saturday, having a good time a-picking, and I paid for the guitar that summer. He got me that thing at his cost, and it cost $90. Oh, Lord, I was proud of that guitar. But in all truth, compared to my guitar now, it was like fretting a fence. It was really hard to play.
Well, I guess it's almost good in a way to get used to something like that, because it makes it seem so much easier when you get a good guitar.
Oh, it really does. And when I got into the folk revival in the 60s, I ran into people who could set a guitar action up to where you could play it, and I came on to another Martin along about that time. Played a Gibson at first on the road, borrowed. Then I came into another Martin, and the action was brought down to where you could play it.
My guest is Doc Watson. You know, I'm glad you brought up the folk revival. It was really during the folk revival that you started to become nationally known. I think you'd been playing dances and you know, playing
played
in
rockabilly
your area.
Music through the 50s and played an electric guitar, Les Paul.
Well, see, this really interests me. You were playing rockabilly and an electric guitar.
Mm-hmm. And rockabilly and old pop standards with an old boy named Jack Williams. Jack had a little group together, and when he heard me pick, he said, "Buddy, I want you to pick with me."
Well, I want to play something that was recorded by Ralph Rinsler. Ralph Rinsler recorded it. You were performing.
In my living room. In my living room, yeah.
And this is a recording. It was from the early 1960s, and this is Everyday Dirt. Tell us a little bit about the song before we hear this.
A fellow, David McCarn, was living in a mill town, Gastonia, North Carolina, and he heard about some recording sessions going on down, I think it was Knoxville, Tennessee, and he probably slung his guitar over his back knowing how those poor old boys fared. He and a fellow, Howard, I've forgotten his given name, went over to Knoxville and recorded a bunch of things, and Everyday Dirt was one of the songs that happened in our little record collection when I was a little boy. And those words are just, oh, you know, they're automatic. I didn't even have to think about the lyrics on that. I did have to work at picking it. I learned it off the old 78 record that McCarn recorded.
Okay, so from the early 1960s, this is my guest, Doc Watson.
Now John come home, all in a wonder, he rattled at the door just like thunder. "Who is that, Mr. Henley?" cried. "'Tis my husband you must hire." Then John sat down by the fireside weeping, and up that chimney he got to peeping. There he saw that poor old soul setting up a straddle of the pot rack pole. John built on a rousing fire just to suit his own desire. His wife got out with a free goodwill. "Don't do that for the man you'll kill." Then John drenched up and down he fetched him like a coon. When a dog had catched him, he blacked his eyes and then did better. Kicked him out right on his setter. Then his wife, she crawled in under the bed, and he pulled her out by the hair of the head. And when I'm gone, remember then, he kicked her where the chinches had been.
Recorded in the early 1960s, that's my guest, Doug Watson. How did you learn how to pick that way? We found out that you were self-taught, but it seems like it would be really hard to teach yourself an intricate style.
Well, by listening to the old records, you could hear after you got familiarized with the instrument, you could hear what strings they were hitting on and what chord they were playing in just by the sound. After all, music is sound. And I think if anybody learns the guitar properly, they shouldn't, as soon as they can get to where they can't, stop looking at the neck and play without doing that, unless it's something really hard that you're getting into. You know, you need to memorize the distances and the jumps on the neck. Well, as I said, music is sound, and I could tell what the guy was doing, the little slide licks on there where he goes down to a certain note and then jumps back up there. All the chords are sound to me. It's like you reading something once I was familiar with the guitar.
My guest is Doc Watson, who is one of America's foremost folk and country performers. We're going to talk more after we take a short break. This is Fresh Air. Guitarist and singer Doc Watson is my guest. Once you went on the road during the folk revival, now you weren't used to traveling. There must have been a lot you learned had to learn how to do. Did you have a business manager to help you out with bookings? And
Ralph Rinsler did the bookings between he and Manny Greenhill of Folklore Productions. But Ralph traveled a lot with me, and if he didn't, when I went go to New York to work in the city, I came by Trailways bus. Someone would always meet me at the Port Authority and take me over to Raff's apartment. I worked lots of times. I'd work at Gertie's Folk City a week or 2 weeks at a time, doing either opening act or just playing the job straight there. It was scary. I was as green as a green apple as far as the city. Country boy, you really
are. Oh, yeah, sure.
As the old timers used to say, a hayseed for sure. But the scary part finally, and the adventure finally got over with, and that road, well, it became a job.
Yeah,
music,
I see what
music,
you mean.
A good audience, I love.
You know, I think there's always clubs who, maybe not many, but there's always some clubs willing to take advantage of a performer. And I would guess that someone who was blind was a more likely target if they didn't have people who were watching out for them. Would you ever have any problems with that?
I was glad when my son Merle started on the road with me, because if we went to a place and they didn't treat me too good, Dad, we won't come back here no more. And that was the end of it. I'd tell Mr. Greenhill, don't book that anymore. That was the end of it. We didn't hit too many places that they weren't really decent to us, but once in a great while there, of course I won't call any names because we're on nationwide radio, but we were in a few places where they treated you like pieces of used equipment, and that was the end of playing there. We just didn't do it again. That's the best thing you can do, you know, is not tolerate that. Just move away.
You mentioned your son Merle. Did you teach him how to play guitar?
No. Merle didn't show any interest in the guitar until he was 15. I was on my first concert tour, a little solo concert tour that spring. And about midways of it, Ralph called me and said, Doc, I've got some good news. And I said, well, lay it on me. And he said, Merle has started playing the guitar. His mother, Rosalie, started him on the guitar. She taught him his first chords and showed him how to play them, and a little bit about timing, and he just took it and went with it. And we met John Hurt for the first time that same summer. We went to the Berkeley Folk Festival, and Merle played backup guitar for him. He'd only been playing about 3 months, and he played backup guitar on the stage. And when we met John Hurt, Merle was enthralled by John's finger style on the guitar. And he took that and added a few little notions of his own, and that's where Merle's picking style, finger style, came from.
So he never felt that he had to work hard to differentiate his style from your style?
No, Merle, he once in a while he'd ask me for some pointers on a melody to a song or something, but Merle played his very own thing on the guitar. I don't think he even ever asked me how to hold the pick. He probably looked at the way I held it, but I never really sat down and taught him how you get this note or that note. I just played a song and sang it, and he jumped in there and learned the lead to it.
When your son Merle died, was it hard for you to go back on the road afterwards?
if you'll pardon a little intimacy here, I'll tell you something that happened or I wouldn't have. Between the time he was killed and his funeral, I dreamed I was in a dark desert, and it was so hot you couldn't breathe. And the sand was pulling me down like if you were in quicksand. And that big, strong hand reached back and said, come on, Dad, you can make it. And he brought me, led me out to where it was cool, but there was sunny, but there was a cool breeze. And I waked up and I thought, well, I'll try. And I took up the last job on that particular tour that we'd canceled. And my friend Jack Lawrence had been working some while Merle was off the road with us for quite a while, and Jack stayed on as the other guitarist. And I'm kind of glad I did. If I had stayed off the road a month, I never would have come back. It was so hard, you know. You couldn't know, Terry, but it was really hard to go back out there without him.
But I guess that dream kind of gave you permission
I believe it was godsend, I think, mm-hmm, the dream mm-hmm. was.
I want to play a record with you and Merle performing. And this is from an album you recorded together, the Doc Watson, Merle Watson guitar album. And this is Talking to Casey. And Merle Watson is featured on slide guitar.
Casey.
Doc and Merle Watson. Doc Watson is my guest. You know, can I ask you a question that I hope you don't mind me asking, and if you do, don't answer it. A lot of performers who are blind wear dark glasses when they perform, and that's something you've never done.
I don't know why. I always hated, used to have had a good bit of light perception. Doesn't bother me now because most of it's gone. But the reflection off sunglasses, you know how it'll come in on the sides. I guess they make them now, it won't do it. But boy, they used to try to get me to wear them. I reckon they didn't like the way my eyes looked. A lot of people would say you ought to wear sunglasses. I hated them. I wouldn't do it. And I just never have worn them. I don't know if the blind that wear them, their eyes look really abnormal or what. I don't know. I never did care to wear them, just didn't do it.
Right.
No particular reason except what I told you.
Yeah, well, I could certainly understand that. I mean, I don't understand why they need to be worn by... I guess it's preference, just whether you want to wear them or not.
I suppose, yeah.
One last thing. You know, there's a really nice recording on the album that we heard earlier from the early 60s of you and your wife singing together. Does she still sing? Do you ever sing together?
She doesn't sing anymore or play anymore. The tragedy of losing Merle, Terry, has just about undone her. She does the office work there at home, but she's not Rosalie anymore. Bless her little heart. I don't know, sometimes I just want to cry. And, you know, especially when I'm away from her, I do, when I think about it. I try not to and try to encourage her what I can. But it's been tough on her, and she can't seem to get over the loss. The grief really has her yet.
Yeah, I can understand. Well, you'll be able to spend more time together when you retire. I regret we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming, for talking with us about music, and thank you very much. And I hope you have a good continuing year on the road.
I'll guarantee you, it's been a pleasure.
Doc Watson, in an interview recorded in 1988. After our interview, everyone at Fresh Air hoped Doc Watson would return sometime for a concert. He did, the following year. We'll hear that concert in the second part of today's program. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
I left my home in Tennessee and I thought I'd learn to travel. But then I met with a pretty little gal and soon we played the devil. I loved that gal and she loved me and I thought we'd live together. But then we tied that fatal knot and now I'm gone forever. Give me back my 15 cents, give me back my money. Give me back my 15 cents and I'll go home to Manny. Yeah, let me hear your opinion.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by this and other NPR member stations. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. It's not too much to say that Doc Watson is one of the world's greatest flat-picking guitarists. Coming up, part two of our special Thanksgiving show from the Fresh Air Archives, we feature a 1989 concert of duets with Doc Watson and guitarist Jack Lawrence. Also, rock critic Ken Tucker reviews Loudon Wainwright's new album, History. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. ¶¶
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Laura Kanoy. The Queen of England has agreed to pay income taxes, British Prime Minister John Major told Parliament today. The Queen is the wealthiest woman in Britain. She'll be taxed as of next year. From London, NPR's Michael Goldfarb reports.
Details of the arrangement are still being worked out. Estimates of the Queen's wealth run as high as $10 billion. In addition, she also receives an annual fee of $12 million from Parliament for performing her duties. The rest of her family also receives a stipend from Parliament. But the Queen has volunteered to pay most of them from her own funds. Throughout the last year, the Queen's 40th anniversary on the throne, resentment has grown about the size of payments made to the royal family, particularly given the scandalous behavior of many younger royals. This resentment has been fanned by the tabloid press. Today's announcement by John Major was designed to turn down the heat on the royal family. I'm Michael Goldfarb in London.
President-elect Bill Clinton today praised the Bush administration's announcement that it's willing to send U.S. forces to Somalia to protect relief shipments. The White House told the United Nations yesterday it might commit up to 30,000 troops. A statement said the U.S. is very concerned about getting food to starving Somalis. Armed gangs and warring tribes steal about half of all relief shipments to the country. Mr. Clinton called it heartening that the U.S. is taking the initiative and working with the U.N. A final decision on the troops is expected next week. Russian President Boris Yeltsin has been trying to reach an agreement on his economic reforms with opposition parties before next week's key meeting of the Congress of People's Deputies. The BBC's Kevin Connolly reports from Moscow.
The maneuvering, which is the inevitable overture to every meeting of the Congress of People's Deputies, has been confined for the last few weeks to the quiet corridors of the Kremlin. Now it's very much out in the open. The acting Prime Minister, Yegor Gaidar, has been taking soundings from opposition blocs, which claim they can deliver enough votes in the potentially hostile Congress to give his government an easier ride than it might otherwise expect, and extend special powers granted to Mr. Yeltsin last year. In return, they want a greater degree of government direction in the economy, while insisting they support reform in general terms. Mr. Gaidar's speech was an intriguing balancing act in which he laid out principles of reform which he said couldn't be compromised, but then listed a number of specific measures designed to appeal to the opposition. Their initial reaction has been, for the most part, cool, in part because they hope to secure more concessions if possible.
The BBC's Kevin Connolly. The European Community released a report today saying a proposed trade agreement with the U.S. would require no greater sacrifice from European farmers than reforms already approved by the EC last year. The study tries to show that the agreement will not harm French farmers above subsidy cuts that were part of changes in May 1991 to the EC's Common Agricultural Program. This is NPR. The United Auto Workers Union and Midland Steel Products reached a tentative contract agreement today to end a bitter 3.5-year strike. Details will be made public Saturday morning. Midland makes truck assembly frames. More than 300 workers have been on strike since July 1989. Israel is allowing 1,000 Jordanian citizens to stay with their families in the occupied territories. NPR's Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin said the decision is a humanitarian gesture toward Palestinian residents of the occupied territories who are married to Jordanians. Under the current law, spouses and children must leave the West Bank and Gaza Strip and travel to Jordan to renew their visitors' permits every 6 months. Palestinians say the trip is often difficult and sometimes permits are denied. Today's decision says that 1,000 Palestinians can renew their permits every 6 months without leaving the territories. Several right-wing Knesset members have objected to the decision, saying Israel is recognizing the Palestinians' right of return to land they left in 1948 or 1967. But Labor politicians say the decision has no political significance and is simply a goodwill gesture. I'm Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
France and Israel strengthened ties today after a meeting between French President François Mitterrand and Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin in Jerusalem. Mitterrand said he would not tell the Israelis how to deal with the Palestinians. He said it was their affair. France has long urged Israel to negotiate directly with the Palestinians and include the PLO in peace talks. Israel refuses to deal with the PLO, calling it a terrorist organization. The winter storm that hit parts of the Great Plains and the Southwest lost some of its power today as it moved across the Great Lakes. The storm hammered Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma, Missouri, and Iowa on Wednesday. The blizzard caused at least 10 deaths and stranded holiday travelers. Dubuque, Iowa, got 10 inches of snow. Light snow is reported today in Wisconsin and Michigan. This is NPR News from Washington.
This is Fresh Air. We've gone into the archives for today's program. Earlier, we heard a 1988 interview with guitarist and singer Doc Watson. Now we're going to feature a concert he recorded in our studio in 1989. Doc Watson is considered the finest flat picker in the country. He was one of the performers who inspired the folk revival of the 60s, and he's remained at the forefront of traditional music. Doc Watson grew up in Deep Gap, North Carolina, where he continues to live. Our concert of duets also features guitarist Jack Lawrence, who has recorded and toured with Watson.
I'd like to do a little tune here that I used to hear Brownie and Sonny do. Excuse me. It's a blues that everybody's had at one time or another. It's called Stranger Blues. 2, 3, 4. Well, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. Yes, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me around. Well, sometimes I wonder why some people treat a stranger so. Sometimes I wonder why some people treat a stranger so. Can't find a place to stay, I just go from door to door. Well, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. Yes, I'm a stranger here, I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me around. Get them blues, Ma. Send up my railroad fare. Yeah, I'll ride home to Daddy to send up my railroad fare. And boys, if he can't send it, well, I don't mind walking there. Well, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me around. Back home, have to wear out 99 pair of shoes. Well, yes, now I am. I'm going back home, have to wear out 99 pair of shoes. And when I get back down to Dixie, I won't have the stranger blues. Well, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. Listen to us walking now. Yes, I'm a stranger here. I just blowed in your town. And just because I'm a stranger, you don't have to dog me around. When the late Jimmy Rogers did his last sessions in the early 30s, he did some music that sat right in the edge of the big band music of that day. Well, here's a pretty little tune old Jim recorded called Blue Eyed Jane. The sweetest girl in the world lives in my hometown. We fell in love like turtle doves while the moon was shining down. I asked her then, I asked her when the wedding bells would ring. And she said, oh dear, it seems so strange for this to happen here. She is my sugar pie. Oh, to me she is the sweetest gal. I love her so, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, she meets me in the lane, my blue-eyed Jane. Pretty Jack. Listen here, Janie dear, I've come to say farewell. Sweetheart, you know I love you so much more than there's words to tell. But I must go away today, honey, won't you come with me? 'Cause I'm gonna be blue, missing you, longing every day for you, my blue-eyed Jane. Hold to me, you are the sweetest thing. I love you so, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, please meet me in the lane, my blue-eyed Jane. And when the sun goes down and the shadows creeping over town, then I'll come home to you, my blue-eyed Jane.
Well, what I'd like to do is take a short break and then continue the concert. And performing live for us today is Doc Watson and Jack Lawrence. And we'll be back with more of the concert after this break. This is Fresh Air. We're featuring a concert from the Fresh Air Archives with Doc Watson and Jack Lawrence. Now, how did you both get together, Jack? How did you start playing with Doc Watson?
Well, I was hired in the fall of '83 by a fellow named Merle Watson, Doc's son, of course. He hired me on because he getting a little tired of the road life, and so in the fall of '83, they called me. And they haven't been able to get rid of me since.
Had you listened to all of Doc Watson's records before you started playing together?
Well, most of them. I started playing in 63 or so, and along with Doc, people like Glenn Campbell Glenn was an influence, and several others.
Do you work out the songs before you play them? How do you go about figuring
sometimes
what an arrangement will be?
Occasionally we'll work them out. Mostly it's arrangements while you wait.
Jack, I think a good old train song might be in order right here. Son, I remember that song over there that Brother Jimmy Jett wrote. And I'm going to plug an album right here. I ain't supposed to do this, but it's on an album I did for Sugar Hill called Riding the Midnight Train, a bluegrass album, my first endeavor on pure bluegrass. Greenville Trussell is a song for the train buffs that love the good old steam engine sounds and all that good. I remember when I went to school at Raleigh, there was a train went by every 20 minutes on an average. And this song makes me think of those days. I remember as a boy how in wonderment and joy I'd watch the trains as they'd go by, and the whistle's lonesome sound you could hear for miles around as they rolled across that Greenville Trussell High. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man, and the Greenville Trussell now don't seem so high. Thank you, son. On the riverbank I'd stand with my cane pole in my hand and watch the freight trains up against the sky. That black smoke trailing back as they moved along the track that runs across that Greenville Trussell High. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man, and the Greenville Trussell now don't seem so high. When the lonesome whistles whined, I'd get rambling on my mind. Lord, I wish they still sounded that way. As I turned to head for home, Lord, she'd rumble low and long toward the sunset at the close of day. But the whistles don't sound like they used to. Lately, not many trains go by. Hard times across this land mean no work for a railroad man, and the Greenville Trussell now don't seem so high. No, the Greenville Trussell now don't seem so high. Doc
Watson and Jack Lawrence, recruited in the Fresh Air Studio in 1989. More from our archives on tomorrow's program. This is Fresh Air.
I'm Linda Wertheimer. Later today on All Things Considered, we have some news on this Thanksgiving Day. It has not been confirmed, nor has it been denied, that the United States has offered to send troops to Somalia to protect aid shipments going into that country. Tom Jelton has returned from areas of Bosnia which are threatening to fall to the Serbs, and he will tell us what he saw there. And from London, we have a report that the Queen has volunteered to pay some taxes. And on this Thanksgiving Day, we will go to a Thanksgiving Day meal in Homestead, Florida. We'll hear a meditation on making pie, and we'll hear about Bailey White's Thanksgiving dinner, starring her great-aunt Elle and her cousin Ralph. That's later today on All Things Considered from National Public Radio.
The closest singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright has ever come to mass success was in 1972, when his song Dead Skunk in the Middle of the Road was a brief novelty hit. But rock critic Ken Tucker says Wainwright has produced a significant body of work that's further enhanced by his new album, History.
I've written so many songs about you. This is the last one. After this, I'm through. When I sing this one, when I do my show, people will hear it. The world will know. I've written so many songs about you.
Since the late 60s, Loudon Wainwright has been making autobiographical music that is never self-absorbed, social commentary that's never self-righteous, and lovely melodies that are never merely pretty. He has over the years been extremely funny, poignant, and sometimes brutally honest about his failed marriage to the singer Kate McGarrigle, who in fact sings backup on the tune I just played, a song that's all about having written so many songs about Kate McGarrigle. He's also created music about his children that is delicately affectionate, yet which never romanticizes the tedious, sometimes infuriating hard work of being a parent. Now in his 40s, Wainwright has designed his new album, History, to be the latest chapter in the ongoing chronicle of his life.
Long ago I hit you. We were in the car. You were crazy in the back seat. It had gone too far, and I pulled the auto over, hit you with all my might. I knew right away it was too hard, and I'd never make it right. I was aiming for your buttock, but I struck your outer thigh. You had on a bathing suit, and right before our eyes, suntanned skin turned crimson where the hand had hit. My palm stung from hitting you so hard that I hurt it. Against a law in Sweden, charges can be filed. Here it's all too common. A parent hits a child.
That's Hitting You, the best of a number of remarkable new songs Wainwright has written about his troubled relationship with one of his daughters. Wainwright has an ability to reveal himself as an impatient, bad-tempered cad, a parent and husband who's never outgrown being an adolescent. What redeems him is his compulsion to confess, to take the blame while casting his confession in art. He writes the most metrically precise couplets in contemporary folk music, and sings them in a once wobbly tenor voice that's grown richer and more accurate with age. The small masterpiece on this album is The Picture, a tender meditation on a snapshot of Wainwright and his sister. The song builds to this verse.
A brother needs a sister to watch what he can do, to protect and to torture, to boss around, it's true, but a brother will defend her, for a sister's love is pure. Because she thinks he's wonderful when he is not so sure. In the picture there's a fender of our old Chevrolet.
or Pontiac our dad would know. Surely he could say, but dad is dead and we grow. It's true the time flies by, and in 40 years the world has changed as well as you and I.
That song mentions the recent death of his father, the magazine editor and writer Loudon Wainwright. Like so much else in this performer's life, it's a complicated event that has inspired rueful, complicated music. I really hope Loudon Wainwright III lives to be 100.
Ken Tucker writes about popular culture for Entertainment Weekly. Loudon Wainwright will join us for a concert the second week in December. I'm Terry Gross. All of us at Fresh Air wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Sometimes I forget that you've gone, and that we'll never see you again. I think for a moment I gotta give him a call. But I can't now, I realize then. No, we can't meet for lunch at the usual place, at the place where we always would go. And there was something I wanted to tell you so bad, something I knew that you'd want to know.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and by this and other NPR member stations. Additional support comes from the George Gund Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we continue our holiday look into the Fresh Air archives with an interview with veteran actor Eli Wallach. Also, we hear an interview with Matt Groening, creator of The Simpsons, recorded just before the series' debut. I'm Terry Gross. I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.